This is Audible.
Hachette Audio presents an RDA Press audio production of More Important Than Money by Robert Kiyosaki and the Rich Dad Advisors.
In this audiobook, you will learn why going to school drains the natural entrepreneur out of us. And more importantly, in this audiobook, you will learn how to get your spirit back. We are all entrepreneurs. We can all build a lemonade stand. This audiobook is about the differences between entrepreneurs who build lemonade stands and entrepreneurs who build global businesses like Apple and Facebook. You can't connect the dots looking forward. You can only connect them looking backwards. So you have to trust that the dots will somehow connect in your future. You have to trust in something, your gut, destiny, life, karma, whatever. This approach has never let me down, and it has made all the difference in my life. End quote. Steve Jobs. Dedication to the entrepreneurial spirit in all of us. Preface by Robert Kiyosaki.
Many people have million-dollar ideas. They believe their new product or service will make them rich and that all their dreams will come true. The problem is most people do not know how to turn their million-dollar idea into millions of dollars. Question: why can't people turn their ideas into millions of dollars? Answer: because most people went to school to learn to be employees, not entrepreneurs. That's why most people are told, go to school and get a job. You never hear, go to school and learn how to create jobs, which is what successful entrepreneurs do. Most people go to school to learn to work for money, a steady paycheck. Few people learn how to create money so that they never need a paycheck. If you read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, you may recall that Rich Dad's lesson number one is, the rich don't work for money. Entrepreneurs understand that lesson very well, and they find ways to put people and money to work for them and build assets that deliver both cash flow and equity. David, Goliath, and Pee-wee. There are three distinct types of entrepreneurs in the world. David's, Goliath's, and Pee-wee Herman's. Goliaths are entrepreneurs like Steve Jobs, founder of Apple, Inc., one of the richest and most influential companies in America. Other Goliaths are Larry Ellison, founder of Oracle, Henry Ford, founder of the Ford Motor Company, Bill Gates, founder of Microsoft, Thomas Edison, founder of General Electric, Richard Branson, founder of Virgin, and Walt Disney, founder of the Walt Disney Company. An important point to keep in mind is that all these Goliaths started as Pee-wee Hermans. Another important point is they were all once Davids. Davids who took on Goliaths in a battle for the top spot. The movie Pirates of Silicon Valley is about young guns, Bill Gates and Steve Jobs taking on Goliaths, IBM and Xerox. The movie explains how Bill Gates stole the PC business from mainframe giant IBM, and Steve Jobs stole what would become the mouse and the Macintosh from Xerox. Pirates of Silicon Valley is a must-see for Pee-wees and Davids, little guys with the courage to take on giants and possibly, one day, becoming Goliaths themselves. The story of Richard Branson has a similar theme. Branson, a rock and roll entrepreneur, became David when he had the audacity to take on Goliath, a world airline giant, British Airways, with his little startup company, Virgin Airways. Today, Virgin businesses are giant killers going after fat, lazy, bloated, and expensive corporate giants. For example, when Richard saw the fat, also known as margins, in the cell phone business, Virgin Mobile was created. Today, Virgin Mobile is the featured brand at Walmart stores across America and ranks among the top carriers in the United States. Not all Davids are Goliath killers. Some Pee-wees become Goliaths by inventing products that change the world. For example, Thomas Edison went from Pee-wee to David to Goliath when he invented the electric light bulb, an invention that led to the creation of General Electric. Mark Zuckerberg started as Pee-wee in his dorm room at Harvard, working on Facebook. He became David when he expanded Facebook from Harvard to other college campuses, and then became Goliath when he took Facebook to the world. Elon Musk went from Pee-wee to David to Goliath when his company, SpaceX, took on NASA. Elon then took on automotive giants like General Motors with his company Tesla, making electric cars sporty and sexy. Pee-wee changes the world. You do not have to be a David or Goliath to change the world. Pee-wees can change the world by being trim tabs. In my book, Second Chance, published in 2015, I wrote about Dr. R. Buckminster Fuller and how he changed my life. If not for Dr. Fuller, or Bucky as he was called, there would not be a Rich Dad company. I would probably still be in the rock and roll business like Richard Branson. And I would never become a teacher or an entrepreneur in education. I had the good fortune to study with Dr. Fuller three times in the summers of 1981, 1982, and 1983. Dr. Fuller passed away a few weeks after the class I had with him in 1983. His passing inspired me to let go of the rock and roll business and become a trim tab, a pee-wee, in the business of education. The Rich Dad Company produced a video titled The Man Who Could See the Future, a mini-documentary on the financial crisis, and it is free to anyone who is interested in learning how to see the future and how to solve the economic crisis via financial education. To view this documentary, visit richdad.com/RDTV. Today, the Rich Dad Company is taking on the old, out-of-date, out-of-touch, and extremely expensive education industry. Our job is not to kill Goliath. Our job is to be a trim tab on the SS Titanic, also known as the education system. Question: what is a trim tab? Answer: a trim tab is a tiny surface on the trailing edge of a larger control surface, such as on a boat or aircraft. A trim tab is like a rudder on the rudder of a ship, and it's how ships stabilize to stay on course without the operator constantly applying control force. Fuller often asked himself, "What can I do? I'm just a little guy." That's when he decided to become a trim tab. Rather than becoming a Republican or Democrat and running for political office, hoping to become captain of the ship, he became a trim tab at the back of a ship, a small but strong force that could affect direction and change. In 1927, he became a Pee-wee, a little guy who changed the world. In the video, The Man Who Could See the Future, you will see a few of Fuller's lifetime accomplishments, such as the Geodesic Dome at Expo 67, the 1967 World's Fair in Montreal, Canada. You will see how he influenced me to become a Pee-wee, a trim tab in education. The Rich Dad Company has taken on the school system as little guys, a trim tab that can change the world. That's what entrepreneurs do. Today, the cash flow game is played all over the world as a teaching tool that bypasses the school system. This book is written for anyone who's interested in becoming an entrepreneur and changing the world by becoming a rich and smart business leader. Whether you take on the big guys or stake your claim to uncharted territory, success as an entrepreneur is not an easy path. It takes strength, commitment, and discipline, and it takes the vision and confidence to surround yourself with a team of smart, experienced, and trustworthy advisors. I think you'll find, as I have, that your team can be among your greatest assets, and they can make the difference between simply having a million-dollar idea and turning it into a multi-million-dollar business.
Part 1. Who's on your team? Business and investing are team sports. Rich Dad. Introduction by Robert Kiyosaki. A few months ago, I was talking with my doctor, who proudly told me, "I'm a millionaire. I've finally made over $1 million." I congratulated him, and since we are close friends, I felt comfortable asking, "How much did you pay in taxes?" "About $700,000," he replied sheepishly. "That's a lot of money," I said, choking and gagging. "Well, how much do you pay in taxes?" he asked. "I know you make more than I do." "I pay a lot less than $700,000," I replied. "And I do make more than you do, quite a bit more. Yet what I hand over to Uncle Sam is significantly less." "What do you suggest I do?" he asked. "Fire your accountant." Bad advice. I have had to fire many accountants, attorneys, CEOs, presidents, and other so-called professional advisors over the years. I have had accountants and attorneys from prestigious, big-name firms who were hopeless. So I meant what I said when I told my doctor, "Fire your accountant." If you have read or listened to my other books, you know how often I write about the importance of having a team. In this audiobook, you will hear from my team. They are the real deal. The Rich Dad advisors, along with other entrepreneurs on the Rich Dad team, will share their expertise as well as the successes, challenges, and failures of being an entrepreneur. My team is much more important than money, because without them, I probably would not have any money. In this audiobook, my team will not tell you about what they do. They will tell you why what they do is important. For example, my accountant, Tom Wilwright, will explain why the rich pay much less in taxes and how you can too. The reason Tom's wisdom is more important than money is because Tom's advice saves me millions of dollars in taxes legally. Garrett Sutton will do the same on the subject of corporate entities and asset protection. You may be saying to yourself, "I don't make millions. In fact, I don't make very much money. Will this book be any good for me?" The answer is absolutely. For many people, the reason they aren't making more money is the same reason they pay more than they need to in taxes. Bad advisors and bad advice. The most important thing. According to many social scientists, the most important thing in life is a person's social and professional network. In other words, the people around you, your team, and the people you work with. If you have poor people around you, you will probably be poor. As the saying goes, birds of a feather flock together. The cash flow quadrant, found in companion file number 1, represents the 4 different people in the world of business. Remember that there are entrepreneurs found in 3 of the 4 quadrants, the S, the B, and the I. E stands for employee. S stands for self-employed. B stands for big business, 500 employees or more. I stands for investor. My doctor is an entrepreneur in the S quadrant. An S can also stand for specialists, small business, smart, and star, such as professional athletes and movie stars. Before firing his accountant, he asked, "Who should I talk to if I fire my accountant?" I gave him 3 names: Tom Wilwright, my accountant, Garrett Sutton, my attorney, and Ken McElroy, my partner in real estate. "Why do I have to call all 3?" he asked. "Because business is a team sport, and they are all part of my team," I replied. "We've been together for years. We've made millions together. I trust them with my life." "But why 3? Asked the doctor. "Because it takes 3 different advisors to make money, protect what we make from taxes, and protect our money from predators. If not for the 3 of them, I would be like you, making millions, but paying excessive taxes and worried about predators who want to steal my wealth through the court system. Do you mean lawsuits, he asked? I nodded. Lawsuits and taxes. You see, if you plan on becoming rich, you need to know how to protect yourself before you get rich. My doctor had another question. Why didn't my accountant give me this advice? That really is the million-dollar question, isn't it? And the answer is that I don't know. My friend would have to ask his accountant that question. What I do know is that my previous accountants did not really know how to protect my wealth either. They were smart and expensive. When I realized they did not know or understand why I invested in real estate, I let them go. When another accounting firm suggested I sell all my real estate and invest in mutual funds, I fired them immediately. They may have been smart accountants in the E quadrant, but they were not smart accountants in the I quadrant. In this audiobook, you will learn from my team so you can build your own team. Being an entrepreneur is no big deal. Almost anyone can be an entrepreneur. There was a young girl in my neighborhood who had a babysitting business. Her parents allowed her to use the family home to take in young children of different ages in the evenings. Parents would drop their kids off and gladly pay her fee to be able to enjoy an evening without the kids. Once her charges were asleep, the young entrepreneur would do her homework while she made $10 an hour per child. On a Saturday night, her busiest night, with seven kids to watch, she earned $70 per hour plus tips. Not bad for a 15-year-old girl. She used her earnings to pay for most of her college tuition and expenses. In other words, she reinvested her money, which made her a richer entrepreneur. I do not know if she paid taxes. That is between her, the tax department, and her conscience. The point is that anyone can be an entrepreneur. The problem is, very few entrepreneurs become rich entrepreneurs. Statistics show that most entrepreneurs do not become rich. In fact, many small business owners earn less than their employees. The small business owner earns less because their work continues after the employees go home, and they work even when the business is closed. When you calculate the number of hours the small business owner puts in and how much they are paid, many earn less per hour than their employees. A friend, an entrepreneur, recently had a news article written about her. The newspaper stated she made $80,000 a month. I am sure many people gasped at hearing that amount. Later, when I had a coffee with her, I asked, "How much of that $80,000 a month do you keep?" Smiling, she said, "None of it. I reinvest every penny of it to grow the business. We survive on my husband's paycheck." Being an entrepreneur is a 24/7 job. Even when they are not working physically, most are working mentally or worrying emotionally. Employees can go home or go on vacation. Most entrepreneurs cannot. I've heard that Bill Gates did not take a day off for 8 years while he was starting Microsoft. I stress this because many employees think that being the boss is easy. Many employees think they do all the work and the boss has it easy and makes all the money. The reason many employees think the boss is not working as hard as they are is because employees and entrepreneurs do different types of work, work that requires different skills. Statistics show that the reason 9 out of 10 small businesses fail in the first 5 years is because most employees, even college graduates with advanced degrees such as MBAs, do not possess the essential skills to be entrepreneurs. Making matters worse, of the 1 in every 10 that does survive the first 5 years, 9 out of 10 fail in the second 5 years. I know. I have been one of those statistics. I have had far more failures than successes. I am quite certain that the reason most employees do not become entrepreneurs is because the thought of failing and of being without a steady paycheck terrifies them. For those that cannot control that fear, it is best they keep their day job, their benefits, and paid holidays, punching out at 5 o'clock, having dinner, watching TV, enjoying their 3-week vacation each year, and appreciating the security of being an employee. What is an entrepreneur? Entrepreneur is a big word that means different things to different people. Barron's publishes a book titled Finance and Investment Handbook, and it offers this definition of an entrepreneur. Entrepreneur, a person who takes on the risks of starting a new business. Many entrepreneurs have technical knowledge with which to produce a saleable product or to design a needed new service. Nice try, Barron's. On the surface, their definition is accurate, yet the word entrepreneur runs much deeper. As stated earlier, most entrepreneurs fail in the first 5 years because they lack the skills that entrepreneurs need. My neighbor, the young babysitter, has the technical skills to be a successful babysitter. For someone her age, she made a lot of money and put herself through school. But she lacks the entrepreneurial skills to build a business and become a rich entrepreneur even after she received her college degree. Today, she is a high-paid employee in a large medical corporation. For those of you who have read or listened to my other books, you already know that my rant is that our schools teach young people to become employees, not entrepreneurs. That is why we are all trained to memorize and regurgitate, much like Pavlov's dogs were trained to salivate every time the dinner bell was rung. The admonition, go to school and get a job. We are not trained to say, go to school to start a business and create jobs. A young friend of mine recently graduated with a master's degree in entrepreneurship. He said the many instructors spent a lot of time teaching his class how to prepare a resume to get a high-paying job. Are you kidding? True entrepreneurs do not focus on resumes. True entrepreneurs review resumes and hire employees whose resumes reflect the skill sets the team needs. Different entrepreneurs. Entrepreneurs come in many, many different shapes, sizes, and styles. Another one of my neighbors is a medical doctor who is in private practice. He is an entrepreneur. Another man in the same neighborhood is a medical doctor who quit his job at a large hospital to become an entrepreneur working on a new drug to cure a disease of the brain. He and his wife have been struggling financially for over 6 years as their new drug goes through the government approval process. Three other neighbors are large real estate developers. Another neighbor is a real estate broker who does not develop real estate but sells it. She is an entrepreneur and owns a medium-sized real estate brokerage. Two other neighbors own professional sports teams, baseball and basketball. They are sports entrepreneurs who employ professional athletes and coaches, paying some of the athletes millions of dollars each year. A few of my neighbors are the coaches of these teams, employees hired by the sports entrepreneurs. Artists tend to be entrepreneurs. Many artists are professional painters, musicians, and actors. The Beatles were entrepreneurs who earned fortunes in the world of music. Many choose the path of entrepreneurs because they hate being employees. They want to be their own boss. They want to do their own thing, and they do not like being told what to do. Many became entrepreneurs because they cannot get or keep a job. There are many people who are called serial entrepreneurs. They start a business and sell it. They start another business and sell it. They are much like people who flip real estate, buying real estate properties only to resell them as quickly as possible. And a few entrepreneurs become entrepreneurs to change the world. I put Henry Ford, Thomas Edison, Walt Disney, Steve Jobs, Bill Gates, Oprah Winfrey, Sergey Brin, Jeff Bezos, Richard Branson, and Mark Zuckerberg in this category. Their impact on the world will last for decades. Related to this audiobook, it is important to point out that Henry Ford, Walt Disney, Thomas Edison, Steve Jobs, Bill Gates, Oprah Winfrey, Mark Zuckerberg, and Richard Branson did not finish school. These entrepreneurs may not have finished school because they did not want to go to school to get a job. They wanted to become entrepreneurs who changed the world, and they have. Are we born entrepreneurs? The question many people ask is, are people born entrepreneurs, or are entrepreneurs created? I believe we are all born entrepreneurs. That is why I began this chapter with the story of the high school girl with her own babysitting business. We have all seen kids with lemonade stands or out selling Girl Scout cookies. Anyone can be an entrepreneur, young or old, the highly educated or academic dropouts. During the agrarian age, most farmers were entrepreneurs. They held a small plot of land, tilled it, planted it, harvested the crops, and fed their families. What they didn't consume was sold. Then came the industrial age. Millions of farmers left the farm, moved into cities where the factories were, and became employees. Today, our schools continue to train young people to be employees. The problem is, we are now in the information age, and technology is replacing employees. When employees go on strike and demand higher wages, jobs move overseas to lower-wage countries, or a new technology replaces the employee. The buzz about the rise of robots is real. In our supermarkets today, checkout clerks are being replaced by automated checkout stations. With the idea of job security for life threatened, being an entrepreneur is the hot new profession. Many forecasters predict that the S&P 500 will be downsized to S&P 300 because new entrepreneurs will make 200 of today's 500 companies obsolete. This means more unemployment for millions of employees who found a job with the wrong company. You may remember that it was Stephen Sasson, an employee of Eastman Kodak, who invented digital photography in 1974. Less than four decades later, in 2012, Kodak, a 131-year-old company, filed for bankruptcy protection. It was their own technology that put them out of business, costing thousands of Kodak employees their jobs. Today, the mantra of go to school to get a safe, secure job is an obsolete idea. Technology and global competition will one day make all of us, as employees, obsolete. That may be why many college dorms all across the world are incubators for student entrepreneurs, hoping to create the next Facebook, the next new thing, the next business that will change the world. The problem is, most entrepreneurs, even if they get a business off the ground, will never become rich. The facts are that most entrepreneurs are not much different than an employee, living paycheck to paycheck. The challenge is becoming a rich entrepreneur. Ask entrepreneurs. The following is an excerpt from Forbes magazine about the importance of a college education and being an entrepreneur. Quote, while 69% of business owners surveyed had attended college, well above the national average, only 68% of this college grad group said they believed this education made a difference in their success. Compare that to 86% of the general population who believe college remains a good investment, albeit an increasingly expensive one. Only 61% of all business owners felt a college education was very or somewhat important for success in today's economy, a number that stands in stark contrast to the general public sentiment on the value of a college degree, unquote. Translation, if you're going to be an employee or a self-employed doctor or lawyer, traditional education is important. Taxicab entrepreneur. In 1907, Harry N. Allen, entrepreneur and founder of the New York Taxi Cab Company, imported 600 gas-powered taxicabs from France. He was the person who coined the word taxicab and millions became entrepreneurs known as taxicab drivers. Today, Uber is replacing taxi, and many independent entrepreneurs are becoming Uber drivers. The question is, how long will it be before taxi drivers and Uber drivers become obsolete? How long before innovations like the Google self-driving car, a car that does not require a human driver, replace both Uber drivers and taxi drivers? In 2014, I attended a reunion of fellow Marine Corps pilots in Pensacola, Florida. Pensacola is where we went through pilot training in the 1970s before going on to Vietnam, and we all served in the same squadron. Not surprisingly, the discussion amongst old pilots and new pilots centered on the question, do we need pilots? Many of the new pilots are learning to pilot drones, not planes. If the Google car can replace the need for Uber drivers, can drones replace the need for pilots? As a former pilot, I know that today's pilots are doing less and less flying. Today, modern planes can take off, fly, and land without the need of human pilots. Human pilots are backup pilots, only there to keep the passengers feeling safe, just in case technology fails. In the world of medicine, robots are capable of doing a better job in the operating room than human surgeons. We should be asking ourselves, who else will be replaced? Why become an entrepreneur? These are a few examples of why more and more people are becoming entrepreneurs. Technology and foreign competition are making people obsolete. The ideas of a high-paying job and a paycheck for life are very old and obsolete ideas. Today, millions are realizing that being an entrepreneur may be safer than being an employee. Andy Grove, one of the founders and CEO of Intel Corporation, is known for his guiding motto, "Only the paranoid survive." This audiobook is for those who are paranoid, those who are dedicated to growing smarter, and those wanting to grow richer as entrepreneurs. During the industrial age, entrepreneurs were known for creating jobs and business. In the information age, entrepreneurs are known for destroying jobs and businesses. One example is the book industry. When Rich Dad Poor Dad was first published in 1997, the bricks and mortar book business was thriving. Then came Amazon, and many industrial age bookstores, like Borders, disappeared. A few days ago, I was in a food market, and one of the people stocking groceries stopped me and asked, "Do you remember me?" When it was obvious that I didn't, she said, "I was the manager of the Borders near your home. I used to set up all your speaking engagements and book signings." The conversation broke my heart. I did my best to stay cheerful and thank her for all she did for my books, my business, and me. As we talked about old times, Andy Grove's mantra, "Only the paranoid survive," kept echoing in my brain. Again, entrepreneurs are not creating jobs. Today, entrepreneurs are destroying jobs and businesses at high speed. The problem is that our schools are still training students to be employees who look for job security, rather than entrepreneurs seeking financial security. The good news is schools are now offering courses on entrepreneurship. While I applaud their efforts, I'm afraid schools still have employees attempting to teach students to be entrepreneurs. That would be like learning how to surf or play golf by reading a book. If you have never been wiped out by a giant wave, how would you know what it feels like, as an entrepreneur, to have your business wiped out by the competition? Simply said, employees see the world through the mindset of employees. Entrepreneurs see the world through a different set of eyes. This audiobook is about seeing the world through the eyes of real entrepreneurs. One of my favorite quotes by Steve Jobs is presented at the opening of this audiobook. It is a powerful insight that merits repeating. "You can't connect the dots looking forward. You can only connect them looking backwards. So you have to trust that the dots will somehow connect in your future. You have to trust in something. Your gut, destiny, life, karma, whatever. This approach has never let me down, and it has made all the difference in my life. Most people fail to become entrepreneurs because they went to school and learned to drive through life, looking in the rearview mirror. Entrepreneurs can see the future. Real entrepreneurs. Kim, my wife and business partner, is the real deal when it comes to being a real estate entrepreneur. She and our advisors have all contributed to this audiobook because it's the team we've created at the Rich Dad Company and with our personal investments that has been the foundation for our success. Our advisors are real entrepreneurs who are in the trenches. They are seasoned and successful and passionate about teaching what they've learned. Kim and I thank them for their contributions to this audiobook. The entrepreneurs in this audiobook share their successes and, perhaps more importantly, their mistakes, and how their mistakes became priceless lessons. While a college education can be important, nothing replaces real-world business experience as the best teacher. One of the problems with traditional education is that our schools still believe making mistakes is bad. Traditional teachers punish students for making mistakes, which means the person who makes the fewest mistakes is labeled the smartest student. In the real world of entrepreneurship, the entrepreneur that makes the most mistakes and learns from their mistakes wins. For example, Thomas Edison failed over 1,000 times before inventing the electric light bulb. Henry Ford went bankrupt 5 times before the Ford Motor Company succeeded. Steve Jobs was fired from his own company, Apple, before he came back and rescued it from bankruptcy. Today, Apple is one of the richest companies in the world. Bill Gates was charged by the U.S. government for monopolistic practices and won. And Mark Zuckerberg was sued by the Winklevoss twins, who claimed they created Facebook. I mention the trials and tribulations of these giant entrepreneurs because this is what real entrepreneurs go through. They can be the lessons that determine the future of a business if we look for the lesson in every mistake or failure. In this audiobook, you will learn what is important, what is valuable, and what you may need to learn to be a successful entrepreneur. Most important of all, you'll learn why having a great idea is only the beginning. Team Code of Honor by Blair Singer. We watch it on Sunday afternoon. We read about it in amazing stories of valor and accomplishment. We wear the jerseys of our favorites. It's the magical dynamic of a group of committed individuals who come together to produce something extraordinary and even unpredictable on a given day. We call it championship team play. For many, it is something that they only hear about but never experience. But for any successful entrepreneur, second to sales, the ability to recruit and build a championship team is the most important skill to master in order to bring your idea or dream to life and success. Why is it critical? By the mere fact that you only have a limited amount of time, energy, and resource to do things yourself, you need a team to be able to deliver a promise to a waiting public. But more than that, there is a magical synergy that happens on great teams that overdeliver and create results beyond expectations again and again. Dr. Buckminster Fuller defines synergy as whole systems unpredictable by the sum of its parts. Building a great team in business is not something that happens by luck. It is also not just the perfect mix of talent and personal chemistry. Herb Brooks, the legendary coach of the 1980 U.S. Winter Olympic hockey team, told his young players that they did not have enough talent to win on talent alone. Yet they beat the world's best in Lake Placid that year. It is something that can be created with inspired leadership and some very definitive steps. For the last 25-plus years, I have built my own business teams in the trucking business, teaching business, franchising, licensing business, and have been part of some great teams. I have also coached thousands of organizations to build their teams. Companies as large as Singapore Airlines, L'Oreal, HSBC, and IBM, to small businesses of 5 to 10 people. In all cases, the principles of successful teams remains the same. The first step is to make sure you are clear on your definition of team. For some, team is family. For others, a group that takes on a common goal. For others, it entails a level of transparency and honesty that many do not even experience in their primary relationships. There is no right or wrong definition. It's important, however, that all members are on the same page. To make this simple, let's boil it down to a few key steps. Recruiting. Recruiting is the promise that attracts the right players to the team. And in order to do that, there's an important first step. Get clear on the mission. What is it you are trying to achieve, and why? Probably the why is the most important. Years ago, Robert introduced us to one of his friends, a retired general in the Marine Corps. He was fascinating to talk with, especially because he had been in charge of recruiting for the Marines. He stressed one of the most important things about building teams. He said that the Marine Corps pay scale is very low, so clearly new recruits do not come for money. He said they enlist because of who they hope to become in the process of becoming a Marine. He said that young recruits want to be part of something bigger than themselves. Now think about that for a moment. There are no promises and no money, only the desire to grow and be part of something significant. As a business owner, can you make that same offer? That is why I say that your number one skill is the ability to sell. Without that, you will find it difficult to inspire people to work for you or with you for the right reasons. Think about a franchise. Franchisees actually pay to be part of a team. As an undergraduate attending The Ohio State University, I had the privilege of being a student manager for the Ohio State Buckeye football team under the leadership of legendary coach Woody Hayes. It was there that I learned the importance of discipline, hard work, selfless team play, and playing for something bigger than a trophy. Most players on the team knew they would not play at a professional level, but they wanted to be part of something. In my first trucking business, we were not the highest paying employer, but we had minimal employee turnover and an amazing team who pulled our business from the brink of disaster time and time again and helped us become one of the fastest growing air freight trucking operations of its kind at the time. As captain of a high school cross country team that was in contention for a state championship, our mantra was to stay together and push each other. If you know anything about cross-country running, you know that one or two superstars will not win it for you. We prided ourselves on running together close to the front of the pack. That is how we won. Every day we asked, what kind of a team would we have to become to run in the state championships? The code. I learned a long time ago, and from watching Coach Hayes, that all great teams have one thing in common. As a matter of fact, this is true of any great business, religion, civilization, or family. The ones who last and who succeed have rules. A simple, understandable set of rules that we call a code of honor. It is a set of rules that take the core values of any group, values like hard work, honesty, accountability, and team play, and protect them with a set of rules. Think of the Ten Commandments. That is a classic code of honor. It was designed to take a group of wandering Israelites and keep them together and strong as a culture. In a business or a marriage, when the rules are ignored or not enforced, chaos and disorder soon follow. Coach Hayes would go ballistic if a player broke curfew, was late to practice, swore on the practice field, disrespected a coach, or failed a class. The code held the team together. Every player wanted to be their best, and Coach Hayes's promise was that if you followed his rules, you would become your best. The first thing we do when we start a company or when we coach a company is to establish a code of honor. Why? Because in the absence of rules, people make up their own rules. And when the heat goes up, people revert to their instinctive behavioral patterns. And most of the time, that is not good for the team. It's not because they are bad people. It's because everyone has their own experiences, backgrounds, and conditioning. In school, we are taught to do things on our own. Not great for team play. Cooperation in school is considered cheating. But in business, collaboration is often the key to success. I was taught to be a strong individual and someone who did not have to ask for help or support. That won't work if you're trying to get a whole group to pull together. That is why you have to have rules. As a Rich Dad Advisor team, we have a code of honor that we all subscribe to. In our own individual businesses, we have different rules because we have different teams. My wife and I have a code. We have a code for our kids and family. I have a code for myself. Why? In 2012, my 16-year-old son and I went to Tanzania to climb Mount Kilimanjaro. The first night on the mountain, my son got very sick. The next day, though he tried to move on, he got worse. He could no longer hold anything in his system. It was clear he had to descend and find a doctor. I was faced with a decision. Take him down or let one of the porters take him down. I wanted so badly to climb that mountain. The oxygen was low, my emotion was high, and my intelligence was low. That is a bad combination, but not unlike lots of situations we face in business and relationships. Yet in the middle of that decision, one thought shot through my mind. It was, I wrote a book about this. It's called Team Code of Honor. And the first rule he and I had created before embarking was, we start together, we finish together. Our code was clear. Never abandon a teammate in need. Decision made. I took him down. Without those rules, I might have made a catastrophically bad decision at 10,000 feet. I operate by a code to protect me from myself. After an 8-hour descent, he laid in a questionable third world clinic with me lying next to him until he recovered. It cemented our father-son relationship forever. So much so that he decided to go back the next year, and on July 3rd, 2013, at 11:27 on a glorious morning, he and I hit the summit of Kili together. I handed him a keychain with a pendant that I had been carrying the whole way that said, "We start together, we finish together. I will always have your back, Dad." I learned that there was something bigger and more powerful than a mountain. It's called love, and luckily we had created a rule to protect it. Believe it or not, other families on other expeditions did not make those decisions, and it ripped them apart. Performance. One of the rules of teams is this: the higher the performance, the tighter the tolerances and the rules. Championship teams call it pretty tightly. They leave little room for weaseling out of responsibility. Once rules are in place, everyone on the team has to play by them, and everyone has the responsibility to enforce them. This is not always easy. It can be uncomfortable. That is why we have to work on little voice mastery, that little voice in our heads that's constantly second-guessing and chattering about what we can and cannot do. I have seen many teams that wanted high-performance results, but operated with loose tolerances, and wondered why they did not achieve to their expectations. It's like trying to tune a Lamborghini the same way you would tune a Vespa. I can also give countless stories of businesses and teams where the true courage was not in taking on the task at hand, but in being vulnerable and open to other team members. Being able to tell the truth with compassion and receive feedback in order to make the team better are critical to the success of a team. It's not about the summit. I have now summited Kilimanjaro several times. Each time the challenge is how to take ordinary people, non-climbers from all walks of life, and forge them into a team that supports one another to become the best they can be, exceed their own perceived limitations, and take them to 19,341 feet. Here is what I have learned. Enjoy the process. There are two parts to every team goal, the preparation and the task itself. As a leader, you teach your team to love both parts and enjoy the whole process. When climbing Kili, anything can happen. You could twist your ankle. The weather may shift. If you are only focused on the summit, you will be severely disappointed, and energy can drop precipitously. Celebrate all wins. But if you celebrated all the wins along the way, there is no way to lose. Those who only focused on the summit worked hard, but they did not enjoy it as much. As a matter of fact, they became more fatigued than the rest of us. They did not have the energy of daily wins to push them on. They only had a little voice worrying about the end result. Stay focused. It's important to remove extraneous distractions and keep your team focused. On Kili, we had over 60 porters carrying our gear, preparing the campsites, cooking, and breaking camp. All we had to do was focus on climbing. The most powerful team lesson on Kili is something I have taken on to every team in my life. It's one step at a time, one breath at a time. Don't look up at the summit. It can intimidate you. Stay focused on what is happening right now. We are not allowed to ask about what would happen tomorrow or the next day. The result was 5.5 days of being 100% present. Our minds were quiet. Our intentions were focused. We were in the zone. Before every championship or Super Bowl game, the interviews with the competing teams are always the same. When asked about how they feel about playing in the biggest game of all, they always say, "We aren't worried about that. We are just playing one play at a time, doing our best, making corrections, and at the end, hopefully we have a great outcome." This is the language of champions. In business, you set the goals, do the work, and take it one step at a time. Break it down to manageable parts. As a leader, you must keep your team in that zone. If you do, before you know it, you have reached the summit. There is another very similar thing that all champion teams say after they win or achieve their goal. When asked how or why they did it, they rarely say it was for the trophy. They say they did it for each other. A great championship team, particularly in the face of adversity, comes together to support each other, committed to not let the other person down. The night before we summited Kili, the whole team shared that they were a bit sad that we were going to summit the next day. Why? Because we knew that after summiting, the journey would be nearly over. Everyone wanted it to go on because of the wins and incredible lessons we were all getting, and the amazing depth of the relationships we were building. Great teams do not happen by accident, and it's not about the summit. The purpose of a team goal is to keep the team moving, learning, and growing together. And a team code of honor is the foundation for that. The true wins and gifts come along the way if you are paying attention to them. If you can move your team in this way, nobody will ever stop you. The BI Triangle, The 8 Integrities of a Business, by Robert Kiyosaki. Mission, leadership, team, product, legal, systems, communications, cash flow. See the BI Triangle in companion file number 2. I have a great idea. Great, we all have them. It's what we do with them that will determine if this great idea can make it in a highly competitive marketplace. As the preface of this audiobook stated, many of us have had a million-dollar idea. The problem is that most of us do not know how to turn that million-dollar idea into $1 million. That is precisely why the diagram that my rich dad called the BI Triangle is important. The B in BI stands for business owner, and the I stands for professional investor. True entrepreneurs live on the right side of the cash flow quadrant pictured in companion file number 1. When an entrepreneur builds a business, what they build is a BI triangle, or a system of systems. My rich dad called these 8 components the 8 integrities of a business. If the entrepreneur cannot put these 8 integrities together, the business fails or suffers financially. And if any of these components are weak or dysfunctional, the business is likely to struggle or fail. That's how important the components of the BI triangle are. This audiobook will teach you how to put together these 8 critical components of a business and the team that will take your million-dollar idea into a million-dollar moneymaker. One reason why most entrepreneurs fail, even those with genuine million-dollar ideas, is because all they have is the top of the triangle. Most are missing one or more of the other integrities. Notice that the product, or the great idea, is the least important part of the BI triangle. Why many entrepreneurs fail? One reason why most entrepreneurs fail, even those who did well in school, is because schools teach us to be specialists or experts in only one of the integrities. For example, a person who graduates from law school is well educated in the legal integrity of the triangle. They are not experts in the other integrities, although most lawyers believe they are. Another example is the bottom line of the inside section of the triangle, the cash flow line. Most accountants are trained for this line in the triangle. They may be great accountants, but most are not good at the other 7 integrities. If an accountant is in charge of the business, and when the business has cash flow problems, the accountant will often cut back or downsize. The accountant will often cut back on the communications line, cutting funds for advertising, marketing, and sales teams. Often, this causes the business to fail faster. In many instances, if a business is having cash flow problems, rather than cut back on spending, the smarter move would be to spend more on sales, marketing, and advertising. In other words, the reason so many entrepreneurs fail is because their education trained them to be specialists, employees on only one of the 8 integrities. To be a successful entrepreneur, the entrepreneur must think like a generalist, looking at all 8 integrities, the big picture, the whole business, not just their specialty. This is what makes this audiobook different. Rather than learn from just one entrepreneur, you will learn from many entrepreneurs who are specialists from all 8 integrities of a business, my team. To be a great entrepreneur means I need to have a great team. Today our team consists of 8 Rich Dad advisors as well as members of the Rich Dad Company team who are both skilled and experienced in specific components of the BI triangle. What they all have in common is a commitment to the mission of the Rich Dad Company and the fact that they all place a high value on education and lifelong learning. We meet often, we study books together, and discuss what the author is saying and how we can apply those lessons to our lives, our businesses, and our teams. Part 2 of this book will feature profiles of Kim, Ken,